This is the October 1 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Michael Cordonnier of Soybean and Corn Advisor. He's out of Hinsdale, Illinois. John Zanker is with us from Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana. And Dan Zwicker joins us at Zwicker Consulting in Waco, Texas. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find and listen to the whole of our program online at willag.org, willag.org. John Zanker, I'd like to talk about this week's grain stocks report with you. First, what were your initial impressions of the 258 million bushel cut that were projected for corn and the 52 million for soybeans?
Well, we were thinking that given the basis staying as strong as it did in August and September, that maybe the USDA had overestimated the crop. We've kind of felt that way for about a year, but they, you know, the 255 million bushel drawdown even exceeded our expectations. So that was a pleasant surprise. They put most of that on the feeding, and that's the safe thing to do. I think it might not have looked too good if they went back and dropped the yield 3 bushels per acre. So very pleasant surprise, and obviously a very nice reaction to that as well.
In fact, they increased total production last year, so they managed to pull quite a bit into the feed and residual and take that out of the marketplace. Did the market react for corn the way you thought it should have, and was there enough follow-through on Thursday?
Yeah, I think the reaction is about right. We put 17 or 18 cents on with that 220 or 255 million drop. I think that's fair. You know, it's going to be really interesting what they show us on the 9th when they use that beginning stocks number on this new crop. And, you know, we're really going to start pulling that new crop number down into an area that suggests higher corn prices to come after we get out of this harvest.
Given all of this, Dan, you've been telling us since the beginning of the year that your technical timing was showing something in the late part of the season that would be an upturn in the marketplace. We detailed part of that during the closing market report on Thursday afternoon. Can you go back through that and maybe start with the counter-seasonal move and what that has meant?
Well, that's I'm big on cycles. I'm big on watching the seasonalities, what the market normally has done over a period of time. And anytime market starts doing something that's out of the ordinary, such as a counter-seasonal move, whether it's a counter-seasonal advance or a counter-seasonal decline, because that's always, even though I'm a technician, being a farm advisor for 40-some years, I always had to understand the fundamentals that made those moves take place. So basically, when you get into a counter-seasonal move, that means that the underlying fundamentals are different than what's actually being published, whether it's by the USDA, whether it's by a major university. I grew up in the era where you had, you know, those were your two main sources, was USDA and your land-grant university economists came out with their opinions. And so September is one of those months that, you know, 8 out of 10, 17 out of 20 years, the market declines. You usually have the August crop report that gets everybody geared up for a bearish harvest, but you usually get a little bounce out of the August crop report. And then around Labor Day, the market starts turning south because seasonal harvest pressure begins to take hold and pushes the market down into an October low. Normally, the first half or first 10 days of October, beans have a strong tendency of making a low during the first 10 days. or so of October. Corn also does. Beans is more of a commodity that makes that October low and then basically never looks back. It climbs its way on into the winter months, winter, spring months, and a lot of that will depend upon nowadays, you know, what happens in South America. Corn has a tendency to kind of have an October low, a bounce into November, but then many times it comes down for a secondary seasonal low when it gets into December deliveries, kind of goes for a double bottom. And then once you get past the December delivery period, then corn then has a normal seasonal advance as you go on into the spring months. So the clue here was, you know, September, when the market started going counter seasonal and it kept building momentum. Now, we did have that pause here a week ago, but that was due to some very overbought technical conditions. And then the market settled down, waited on the report, and boom, the report came out bullish. And now we've accelerated to the upside at a time that the market normally starts turning up. Now, this may be a little sooner. Like I said, normally seasonal lows are made during the first 10 days or so of October. But since we're in a counter seasonal advance, and like I mentioned on the Thursday afternoon session, is that when a market is able to, let's say, move upstream and make advances as the market is moving upstream, then when it starts going downstream, it makes it all the easier. So I think the market now is, over the next week here, barring any kind of major twist and turn probably in the October crop report, that the seasonal advance is going to take hold. And the market is going to be easier for the market to climb higher as you go on into November. And then we'll we'll go from there. Now, I think once you get past the election, things could get a little dicey. And we all know what could or may not happen on the election. But I think the market is in pretty good shape technically and cyclically. To continue its advance as we go into the first 2 weeks of November. Once you get past that, I guess I'll take one day at a time, and we'll just kind of evaluate the fundamentals and see whether or not that might be a good time to sell. As a rule, and rules are meant to be broken, if you get a fall rally, it's difficult to make storage pay, let's put it that way, unless you're a hedger and you're locking in carrying charges. But if you get a fall rally, it's difficult to store grain and make that pay. And then the other cautionary note is if you get a strong fall rally, you have to take an awful good look at putting some kind of price protection on next year's crop. Because when you have fall rallies, you have a tendency then to have declines through the winter and on into the spring, and those fall prices look awful good.
On that note, I want to continue on the fundamental side now with Michael Cordoniere of Soybean and Corn Advisor. I know that you look both at the northern and the southern hemisphere, and maybe you have something to say about yields in the United States, Michael, but I'm more concerned about what your thoughts are as we move through a La Nina into the South American growing season for Brazil and Argentina, both.
Okay, well, they're just starting to plant in both Brazil and Argentina. And right now, the Brazil soybeans are maybe 1% planted, and they're maybe 30% planted on their full-season corn. In Argentina, no soybeans planted yet, and the corn is maybe 15%. But your question about La Nina is a very good question. Everybody's concerned about it. We now have a moderate La Nina. And if you go back, say, 20 years or so, in the month of September, there's only been six times that there's been no rainfall in Mato Grosso, central Brazil. And of those six times, five of the six ended up having a below normal rainfall for October, and only one had normal rainfall. So the odds are that we'll go into October drier than normal in both Brazil, at least the northern half of Argentina. Now, it looks like it might be some rain coming in maybe in the next week in Brazil. We'll see. But they're talking about no big, heavy rains, sustained rains, until maybe the end of October or early November. Now, this is going to mean the soybean planting is going to be done a little bit late. Most of the guys would like to have their soybeans planted by October 25th. That would allow enough time to plant the second crop of corn, you know, next January and February. But if the soybean planting is delayed, that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to have lower soybean yields. As long as the rest of the season is okay, you could have, you know, normal soybean yields. But if you delay the soybean planting, it does mean that the safrinha corn will be planted later than desired. And a delayed soybean planting has, I think, a lot of implications in Brazil. For example, they're already importing soybeans. They overextended their exports. They've already brought in about 500,000 tons of Paraguay soybeans and three vessels from Uruguay. They're probably going to bring in more because the prices domestically are through the roof, record highs. The crushers can't source soybeans. The Brazilian farmers are going to plant as many soybeans as possible. They're probably going to maybe tear up some sugarcane, put in some soybeans. And the delayed start to soybean planting means there's going to be a delayed start to soybean exports. So I think U.S. exporters are going to get at least a couple weeks more of exports next late January, early February, because Brazil is going to be very slow in getting started. And another thing, in Argentina, the farmers have only sold about half of last year's crop. They're holding on as hard as they can. They're have a hedge against inflation, and they are expecting a significant devaluation of the Argentine peso. So they don't want to sell before that devaluation. The result is the crushers in Argentina are now operating at 50% capacity. So Argentina has limited, you know, exports of soybean meal, soybean oil, and soybeans themselves because the farmers are just holding so tight onto the soybeans. So lots of things going on in South America.
Enough that you think it will continue to have a large impact on the soybean market across the planet, I take it.
Oh, yes. Now, if you look for the whole South America, I'm looking at this next crop, soybean acreage being up about 2.9% in South America, production up about 4.6%, and that translates to about 8 or 9 million tons more of soybeans. Now, for corn, I think the area goes up about 5%, and the total production goes up about 8 million tons compared to last year. But I think soybeans are in the driver's seat. But in Brazil, they have record prices for soybeans and corn and cattle and for lots of other crops. It's just unbelievably how good things are going. The only downside in Brazil is cotton. Cotton prices aren't very good, but everything else is at record levels.
You know, this is the first year that I have ever heard very much discussion about first crop corn in parts of Brazil. I'm wondering why that's the case, probably because of the such high prices. And does that come out of the country in some way, or is it just filling a gap for them?
No, the first crop of corn is about 25% of Brazil's total corn production. And I would say that almost 100% stays within the country, because all the livestock producers are in southern Brazil, and that's where the first crop of corn is planted. So that first crop of corn stays domestically. And prices are very high. If you have corn to deliver in December, they're willing to pay you $6 a bushel. Now, the second crop of corn, double crop after soybeans, that's your export product. So that goes to the export market. And prices are very good for that as well. So, yes. They're competing, corn and soybeans, competing for the first crop in southern Brazil, and they're both got record prices. So how good is that?
And just repeat for me, what's your early assessment of the potential for second crop corn as we continue to delay the sowing of soybeans this spring right now?
Okay. If, let's say, the farmers could plant all their soybeans in the next 2 or 3 weeks, then I think the second crop of corn goes up at least 5%, if not more. Now, if planting keeps being delayed and it gets towards the end of October and you're still waiting to plant, then they may not do a 5% increase in the second crop of corn. But having said that, the prices are so good for that second crop, and they have already forward contracted over half, and some guys even 60% of their anticipated production, so they will try to plant as late as possible, even if it's outside the ideal planting window, because they've already sold the crop at a very good price. So these high prices, you can live with a little bit lower yields by planting a little bit later. So I think they will go at least 5%, maybe more. Now, the weather may not cooperate with the total production, but at least the acreage is going to go up.
John Zanker, I want to turn to you now, because after listening to this, there will be many a farmer that is on the combine this afternoon or tomorrow or whenever they happen to be out in their soybean field. Probably they may have some storage on farm for them, but likely going across the scale. And they're thinking, gosh, I may have a much better shot at a much higher price later in the season. Fundamentally speaking, do you think that's really the case?
Well, it could be. I think that Dan made a good point. There's a decent chance that we could see the highs, at least for a while, until we get into a weather problem in Brazil or Argentina, and then, of course, with our own crop. But historically, I think there's a good point to be made that, I mean, we're going to, off the lows, we've run this market up over $1.80. Could be $2 before it's over, and then you know, this isn't a bad crop. So, you know, a bad crop, we certainly do tend to peak prices early. So this one's kind of, you know, it's not as good as we thought it was going to be earlier. So that's there too. But, you know, we're going to see some changes on October 9th in that supply and demand. They're going to take the beginning carry out essentially now down 50-some million, and maybe add 50 to 75 million exports on. I mean, right now we have more exports on the books at this point than ever before in history. So we may see a carryout just north of 300 million on the 9th. And you know, that's suggesting we could see at some point a run to $11. But the funds are excessively long now. They're long a bunch of beans, or, you know, over a billion bushels. They're long meal, they're long oil, and we're seeing some problems with oil. Oil sales have been poor. Oil prices have fell pretty hard today, and that's what held the beans back. So I think that right now we're, especially if there's any basis premium, we're suggesting to our guys to get those beans out of the field directly to the elevator, the processor, and we'll store the corn.
And clearly, the lack of carry in the market is telling producers to do exactly that, correct?
Yeah, we have just a slight carry to January, but none after that. And really, you know, not enough carry to the January to pay for putting them in the bin and taking them out. So if the basis is extremely weak in some areas, then perhaps. But other, you know, if the trucks are getting stuck at the elevator and can't get back to the combine, then the bin makes sense. But other than that, we're pushing them in. We're pushing them into the processor here in our area.
Dan, what's your best thought about what to do as it relates to either marketing corn or soybeans? I assume you want to sell soybeans across the scale or pretty close to that.
Well, maybe not. Let's say I want to get them sold by the election, by middle part of November, unless there's a fundamental reason that's come into play. I want to have most of my crop either sold and or with downside price protection on it, minimum price contract, and then you have the option to, you know, if something happens in Brazil, you could go on higher. I mean, that's just my line of thinking that a fall rally into mid-November, you just don't turn those prices down. If you want to reown it, go out there and buy yourself a summer call option or something, and then you're on board if something happens in South America, or we have a major currency devaluation here in the United States, or whatever kind of political chaos that we're into, you know, 6 months from now or 3 months from now. But now, if I was harvesting right today, taking them across the scale, I might be a little patient. Maybe go to a short-term basis contract or put them on hold. But basis contracts can get people in a lot of trouble. A lot of people got into trouble last year, so probably nobody's too enthusiastic about doing a basis contract. But if you do a basis contract, do it with the intentions that you'd still pull the trigger sometime by middle part of November or no later than Thanksgiving on corn and soybeans. Now, my upside targets, I would not be surprised if we could hit double-digit soybeans between now and middle part of November. I would not rule that out, that we go on up into, double-digit soybeans, maybe, let's say about 11.50. I think that's a possibility. We're already at 10.50. Another $1.50, that's all. You know, those would be definitely sell points. As far as that would be on the January contract, on corn, I'd be looking at probably the March contract, maybe something up around 4.25. I think that's all in the mix between now and middle part of November.
And then if I could turn back to you, Michael Cordonnier, on this part of the conversation, I would suspect you've been thinking about the size of the U.S. corn and soybean crop. Fundamentally now, the marketplace has accepted the changes USDA made in the grain stocks report. Looking forward to the October number, what do you think it will show? Will the production in the United States, not yield, but production for corn in the United States, change very much this month, do you suppose?
Well, I have U.S. corn production at 176 bushels per acre. And another thing, I think the harvested acreage is going to come down a bit from the September number. So we may be down another couple hundred thousand, maybe 300,000 acres for the harvested area for corn. Now for soybeans, I'm at 51 bushels, just slightly below the USDA, and the soybean harvested area may come down maybe 200,000, maybe 300,000 acres. So I do think we're going to trim both the corn and the soybeans. The soybeans seem to be doing better than the corn. The late maturing soybeans benefit from the rains late in the summer, more so than the corn. So August was very dry, but then towards the end of August, early September, we did get rains, and I think that benefited the soybeans. But I still think there was about a week of dry weather after the survey was done for the September crop report. So I do think the bean yield came down a little bit before they went back out and surveyed now for the report next week. Corn was too far along for much of an improvement with the rains late in the summer.
Michael, could I ask you a question?
Sure.
What is the historical, if there is such a thing, historical changes on both acreages and yields on an October crop report? Because at least my remembrance of October crop reports, there's usually surprises in them more often than not. And I noticed, you're being very conservative on, minor changes. So I guess, what makes
you're right.
Think that you're going to have really minor changes when I remember more often than not, major changes have occurred on October.
See, one of the problems this year, of course, is Iowa. We had all the derecho storm damage, and no one that I have talked to yet can really pinpoint all the damage done yet for all that down corn. But in Iowa, I think the drought in the western half of the state was probably more important than the storm. So you got two things combined there. So Iowa is sort of like the linchpin here, and we may be surprised. It may be coming smaller than what I think, yield-wise and acre-wise. I have heard some guys just decided to call the insurance for, you know, harvest loss instead of trying to harvest that down corn. So that's something we just don't know about yet. And we don't have any history of dealing with something like what happened in Iowa. So you may be right. You know, it may come in below what we're expecting.
What does your S&T table show for ending stocks, given the change in the grain stocks number? USDA currently at 178.5 on corn for their yield. They will make an adjustment in acreage again this month, which would include all the acreage across the United States, plus a secondary adjustment for the derecho they were continuing to survey. What do you have as an ending stocks number? Because it is, how close is it to 2 billion?
Well, I'll tell you what, let me forego that answer because I really don't do much on the S&D tables. I'll let Dan or John, who are much better at it than I, to answer that question.
All right. Well, John, how about you? It should be around, what, 2.2 something, I suppose.
Well, it's at 2.2 just with the adjustment on this old crop carryout.
Correct.
But I think Michael's right. I think that corn yield's going to come down a little bit. I think at least a bushel, bushel and a half. I traveled out to Iowa twice into the heavily damaged area, and I was just stunned with what I saw. Certainly had outside of flooding, I had never seen anything that destructive. I literally, from Cedar Rapids to west of Ames, a little west of Ames, 120 miles, drove across 30, came back across 80, dropped down to the south. Across 30, I never saw one field that wasn't a seed corn field. I never saw one field that was not damaged to some extent. The second time I went out, I saw corn being disked under. Some of it was surprising to me that I thought maybe they'd try to get it harvested. So I want to make another trip out there again soon just to see what's going on in that. But I tell you, I was really stunned. I calculated that damage at roughly 350 million bushels. And then, like Michael said, the drought, I saw a lot of drought damage, especially as I dropped down onto I-80. Des Moines back to the Iowa City area. So they're at 191. I think they're high. I just I think that's a little high. Northern Illinois missed out on a lot of rains as well in August. In that northeast corner had suffered some pretty rough planting conditions. So I think the USDA is a little high there as well. So I can take that carryout, that new crop carryout down under 2 billion. And, you know, I won't be shocked if in the end the Brazil or the Chinese take another 400 million bushels of corn before it's all said and done. So we're starting to, I think the USDA will show a little bit, maybe 50, 75, 100 on this report. We're starting to make this thing interesting. And then when you look at any kind of problems with that second crop in particular in Brazil, and then maybe here, you know, we're going to be 9 years past our last severe drought. So the clock's ticking on that one. So we see some pretty explosive situations developing, perhaps.
On that note, I think I will wrap this up. Any final word from each of you for the day? I think, Dan Zwicker, I'll start with you.
I really don't have a lot to add other than, you know, stay patient, but pay attention to the market. Look for opportunities to put some price protection on. Either through puts or minimum price contracts or maybe some outright selling.
Michael Cordonier, final word from you.
Well, we finally got a more interesting market after years at the doldrums, so I think it's good news for the farmers. And I agree with Dan and John, take advantage of these prices when you can and protect yourself with some floors in the markets.
And John Zanker, your final word.
Well, I agree 100% with getting some floors set in, and Dan mentioned minimum price contracts a couple times. Certainly we need to look at that. Anything that we sell, old or new crop now, We're going to be looking at getting out there into the summer, probably the September, and getting some minimum price coverage on, because again, we've turned this thing around in 2 months, and the upside price potential has gone up substantially.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may always hear the whole of our program online at WILLAG.org. That's willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Michael Cordonnier of Soybean and Corn Advisor out of Hinsdale, Illinois, John Zanker from Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana, and Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.